Hi, Mike. Vinay, welcome to Business Uncomplicated. How are you guys doing today?
Great. How are you doing, Rich?
Doing great.
Great. We're excited to have you guys on the cast and really excited for the new book, Workforce Intelligence. It seems like you guys have been on quite a journey yourself, and I think it's a journey that a lot of people are going on today. So I think people will really benefit from the insight of where you guys started this journey and where you are now. So before we get going, let's take a minute and maybe you guys can each individual give a little bit about your background and the company.
So Mike Sullivan, I am a co-founder and chief growth officer here at One Digital. Started the company with my partner, Adam Bruckman, 26 years ago. So we have been, I'd like to say, chopping wood for a long time. But we've embarked on this new adventure that Vinay and I have been together on now for probably the better part of 3 or 4 years, trying to understand AI. But yeah. We've been in the advisory business, so the insurance and financial services business. So we help employers with their employee benefit packages, retirement plans, that kind of thing. So as Vinay and I like to say, we are in the advice business, the information dissemination business, and we are trying to get our hands around what happens when there is not asymmetry of information and there is way more information available than ever before. So we have embarked on this journey to understand how we're going to continue to reshape our company. But I've always been in the employee benefits business for my entire career and started One Digital, and we're about 6,000 employees now around the country. So we're in the U.S. and Canada right now, and I have been at it for a while.
Nice. Vinay?
Well, Rich, Andy, thank you for having me. My name is Vinay Didwani. I'm the Chief Product Officer here at One Digital. I've been with the company almost 5 years now. My background's a little bit different than Mike. So I'm a startup entrepreneur person for most of my career. Started my first software company out of high school, skipped the whole university thing. We sold that company to Computer Associates back in the day. I took a left turn and did some neuroscience research at MIT at the Media Lab for a few years, and then spun out a company there that was in the insurance and benefits space. Don't ask me how I went from neuroscience to insurance and benefits, but it somehow happened. And that company we sold to Sun Life, which is a big Canadian insurance company. And then I took a left turn again and worked in the COVID vaccine space for about a year and a half, helping to run some of the largest vaccination sites here in Massachusetts at Gillette Stadium and Fenway Park and places like that. And then I got a call from Mike and I'm back in insurance and very excited to be here. And, you know, we'll get into all this stuff, but it's a great company to work for and a great
honestly,
mission.
Rich, he still is regretting he ever picked up the phone when I made that phone call.
I'm sure. Great. So we talk a lot on the podcast with a lot of people about AI transformation. It's everywhere. You can't get away from it. And everybody's kind of on their own journey. We talk about some people's journey starts with, hey, we're just going to get a large LLM and throw it to everybody and pray for the best. Some people are, well, maybe we'll do this. I'm not sure. Very tentative waiting in. And then I think there's everything in between. As you guys started thinking about this, you talked a little bit about in the beginning of the book about the disruptions, you know, the dot-com, COVID, all these things that happened. You kind of said you already survived, right? And now you have this new AI journey evolving for everybody. So take us through kind of what your initial thoughts were about AI, how it would affect your company and yourselves personally. And what did that look like for you all?
Well, I would say that, I mean, if you sort of contextualize the fact that our clients are employers and we're walking the side door of employers every single day, 100,000 clients around the country, and we're trying to help them understand how to manage their workforce. And so there's been this sort of drumbeat of human capital management. How do you manage your workforce? How do you understand quote unquote headcount? How does work get done inside your four walls? But we have thousands of employees every single day that are sitting down with employers saying, we're going to help you manage your workforce. Into that backdrop, we're sort of like everything is changing. And Vinay and I tell the story where we were watching an email chain going around inside of our company with a bunch of leaders on it. And there was a discussion about, quote unquote, who actually owned human capital management inside of our company, like who led that. And we were sitting there going, what about the fact that it's not about just human capital anymore? What about the fact that we are deploying coworkers that are fully, you know, capable of doing significant amounts of work? Everyone's still using this acronym, human capital management. We need to think about this differently. and we need to go have a different conversation with our clients, but we need to do some real soul searching about what are these words that we're using? How is this transformation going to take place? Because at the end of the day, we're supposed to know this stuff. Our clients are asking us every single day. We better get our act together. So it led to some really intense thought around how do we think about it and what comes after human capital management if it's not just about that anymore. And that led us to this conceptualization of workforce intelligence and beginning to think about that as an asset that you need to nurture and grow on a regular basis. But it really stemmed from our clients are asking for us these, they're asking us for these answers. We better figure it out. That's how the journey started.
Did you believe prior to AI being introduced that human capital management was broken or wasn't done well and AI just elevated that discussion? Or was it more the fact that the conversation today is just as you put it is, it's not just employees doing work anymore. It's also these agents and bots we're creating.
Yeah, I think that we as a sort of capitalist society have figured out how to maximize human labor, how to be productive, how to pay people, support people. Obviously, there's a lot of challenges in doing this at scale and how well we do it as a country and so on. But the point being that we've learned how to manage human resources to be successful and do amazing things. What we haven't learned is how to manage human and artificial talent. And that's the thing that Mike talked about, it's a framing issue. You know, Rich, you asked the question of, you know, people sort of jump in with a lot of use cases or they just, you know, deploy an LLM or whatever. And we decided to take a very different approach to how we think about AI with the basic assumption that AI is talent. And in your organization, you have human talent and you have artificial intelligence talent. And how you manage that talent is a brand new discipline unto itself. And when we think about the role that HR has and human capital management, that is really about talent management in this both human and artificial sense. And again, when you look at it through that lens, not only does it open up a wealth of capabilities and opportunities and a way to drive AI adoption in a significant way, I think it also greatly appreciates the impact that AI has on your organization, but then also helps you elevate your humans, which is why we're in this in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can get into all of that. But I think that framing around AI as talent was the really key insight for us.
Mike, you mentioned workforce intelligence. Break that framework down for us. I love this idea of managing the human talent and managing the AI talent. What are we missing in that framework?
Well, I would say that, you know, we have had a myriad of discussions about how do we, it used to be make sure you have the most talented people possible and then somehow try to get what's in their head and what's in PowerPoint decks and Word documents into your client's head and coach them along the way. We're now, I'll give you an example. In our employee benefit space, we have a coworker that's been fully functional for the better part of 2 years. His name's Ben. We're very creative when the employee benefits coworker ends up being Ben. But I was with Shelley McLean, who's Ben's manager, yesterday, and she was explaining to me that we're up to something like 2,000 ongoing discussions with Ben a day with our colleagues. And when you think about the combined intelligence of those two entities, someone who's a consultant that's going out to sit across the table and not just explain what a client needs to know, but understand what's in their eyes and what the body language is telling you and making judgment calls about, you know, everything to do with that meeting, coupled with the fact that they were working with Ben for several hours to prepare for that meeting. How does that come together? How do we manage and create a framework for managing that combined blended workforce? And what Vinay and I ended up falling upon is we didn't really have, there's like an intelligence layer that sits above human capital management. Human capital management isn't going away. You still have to pay people. You still have to manage benefit programs. You have to help with 401k, those kinds of things. So that remains. But this intelligence layer that is the combination now of your people and artificial intelligence, we have to figure out how to talk about that. We have to figure out how to manage talent differently. We have to get people, human talent and AI talent, to work together and want to work together and trust each other differently than it's ever been explained. And then we have to come up with a way to measure it. So we came up with a scoring mechanism that we're now working with an academic institution to help provide real rigor on how we evolve that score. But honestly, Andy, it came about because we basically said, There's a need for new terminology. There's a new management framework that needs to be created where we need to think about AI deployment as talent deployment. And we need to bring that together for our clients in a holistic way. And that's the journey we've started for pretty much the past 3 years. Vinay, would you, what would you add to
that? Yeah, I agree with all that. What people sometimes jump to is when we talk about AI as talent is they think about an org chart and you sort of think about like, hey, you have a human here and another human there, and then there's an AI, and then there's a human and an AI. I don't think it's like that. And I think our experience is showing that it's much more nuanced than just saying you have AI coworkers and you have humans and they sort of co-work together. It's more about how do you understand the mix of intelligence and the value of artificial intelligence and human intelligence. And in fact, we think about it in the view of irreducible skills and reducible skills. The things that you can break down into a process, the things that you can define very clearly, let artificial intelligence take care of that. The things that are hard to define, reading body language, the squishy stuff, the soft skills, that stuff humans do. And the interesting thing is that what we found through our experience is that what AI is capable of doing is obviously changing very quickly with new models and everything. But it's also interesting on what humans are capable of doing. That is also changing. And it's changing at an individual level. And it's being supported and accelerated by AI. So it's this constant motion, how AI and human intellect is working together, that we're struggling with. How do you measure that? How do you know you're doing that better, right? And what does that look like in your organization? Where do those centers of intelligence exist? That was the challenge that we were faced with and what we've been trying to solve. And you know, the book obviously talks a lot about how we have done that so far. And there's a lot more learning to be done.
But what's really interesting about your approach than what we've traditionally seen is if you read the headlines, right, and believe what you want about whatever the headlines say nowadays, but, you know, Meta, all the big tech firms, Salesforce, go on down the line, hey, we're laying people off because our AI is so efficient, right? Which is a different approach to what you guys were saying. You guys, I think at one point in the book, Mike, you talked about looking at the faces of the employees and saying, these are real people with mortgages, with homes, with, you know, families, and they're not disposable. Feels like what we're hearing and the narrative we're getting, at least from the tech companies, is, no, I'm good. I deployed this bot and I don't need you 4,000 CS people anymore. I don't need you because I've got somebody else to do it better. But that's not what you guys are talking about, which I like the difference, the nuance in that.
Yeah.
So look, I would say that I have difficulty, honestly, Rich. There's like 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 or 50 companies out there that are just operating and working at such a different level that the way they hire and the way they fire isn't really what the rest of us are dealing with. Right. So I think there was a mad scramble for talent. A bunch of these companies probably overhired for numerous years. And maybe this is an adjustment to that. I think that what we are spending a great deal of time on is really one structural issue. A lot of times this conversation gets aggregated up to jobs either remaining or going. And we absolutely, you know, the expression Vinay and I came up with is kind of like, there's a humanity test going on here. And I feel like saying, and oh, by the way, for anyone out there, even you finance folks that want to sort of understand how to expand margin by cutting head, this ends badly for all of us if everyone starts cutting heads. Like there is a circular logic there that ends up badly for everyone. And so we're sitting, if you see the faces rather than headcount, you think differently about this. And really what we are trying to help ourselves and our clients think about is a lot of times it's not jobs staying or going, it's parts of jobs. It's the work that underlines, that sort of makes up that particular job description. And I'll use myself as an example. As someone who leads a corporate development team, I probably used to spend 50% of my time preparing for meetings, thinking about, you know, researching things, putting the pieces of the puzzle together in a way that I could talk to a prospect about what it is we thought we could do for them. That's 5% now. I literally got 45% of the capacity in my job to do something differently. I've also, as Vinay is well aware of, because he has to deal with it, my mind can't turn off relative to the possibilities of where this could go. how we could reshape our company. And the thing we talk about is almost like whether you're a firm or whether you're an individual. By the time AI gets to what you're doing, don't be doing that, right? You have to evolve. And employers and employees have to meet each other in the middle and basically understand that work, the actual work is changing. It's creating opportunities for people to evolve their game, but it's scary for a lot of people. And I will tell you that even a company who's sort of in this space dealing with workforce issues all the time, when I sat down with Elizabeth Crane, she's our chief people officer. And I'm sort of like, we are embarking on something that we have no idea how to do. Like, how do you think about evolving people in their jobs, taking away parts of what they do and expanding them into other things they don't do today and do it across 6,000 people? And it's like doing it while you're flying the plane at the same time. And the point we're making is you have to want to see the faces. When you see the faces, you think differently about how you evolve jobs. If you just say, hey, they used to do this, that's going away, and you cut, I get it. But our view is if it starts with employees getting cut, it's going to eventually get your firm as well.
Yeah, and I think that Rich, you touched on something there with how these tech companies think about human talent, mm-hmm. is that it's dispensable.
Yeah.
And it's replicatable by artificial intelligence. And I think, Mike's words that he used on this are really important, because when you think of this as a humanity test, it comes down to a very philosophical, values-based conversation, which is, do you believe in pro-humanity? Do you believe in the potential and power of people? Or do you believe in the fact that they can be replaced by machines? And if you take this from the approach that says humans can be replaced by machines, and my job is to figure out best way to do that as quickly as possible and continue to do that, then Mike's right. You play that out a little bit, we're in a really bad spot. But I also think that there's a much more practical thing about this, which is, what is your competitive differentiation as a company? If technology is ubiquitous and AI is really smart and it's the thing that anybody has access to, and maybe some people pay more and have access to better models and everything, but basically, if I wanted to build whatever you thought was your competitive advantage, I can build it now because I have access to unlimited intelligence. So if that's the lowest common denominator, what are we all competing on?
Right.
We're competing on our human talent. Right. And the last thing that you want to do is get rid of that, because the thing that you spent so much time and money was to collect the unique lived experiences and intellect of your human beings. And that special mix of that in your company is what is your competitive advantage. You need to supercharge that with AI. But if you get rid of that, you just become homogeneous like everybody else who has AI. So I think it's just so short-sighted for these companies to think that, humans are the problem. And in my cost model, and I need to get rid of them. No, humans are the reason that you can even compete and grow. And it's what you can do with humans and AI that will actually define your success, not what you can replace humans with.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I love that. When you talk about blending artificial and human, and I think you guys said Ben even has a job description, right? Which I thought was awesome. Most people, job descriptions are, hit or miss. Most people will say what you hired me to do, what was in my job description is not my job. So when you talk about bringing in artificial intelligence and weaving it in, and you're talking to your chief people officer, what does it look like to adjust somebody's role and have them take on that more senior role or senior behavior? Because now, as you're saying, you don't have to press the button every day. Like, we got somebody, the computer is going to press the button for you. But some people identify by that, I press the button. And, the old, office space, I'm a people person. I carry the faxes to them. They can't, so you kind of get that playing in your brain.
Yeah.
So how did you reinvent that job description for the employee? And was training involved, or how did that work?
Yeah. It is such an overlooked part of what it means to be successful with AI, because it has nothing to do with the models, it has everything to do with the people. And, one of the things that, you talked about, I push the buttons and now something else is going to do that. You sort of touched on the human element of that, the pride and ego part of it. And I always think about, we've been through this before with BPOs and offshoring, where you'd have somebody come from overseas and watch you do your job. And then you'd be like, okay, they're going to go and take my job. At least in that case, it was another human being. And you could understand, you could get the fact that, okay, it's cheaper for that person to live in India, but they're living, you know, they're earning a living wage doing the job that I did. And I can respect that. I see this happen all the time now where people are like, that thing that I've just been doing for 30 years of my career that I've gotten really good, that little stupid chatbot is now doing it. Are you kidding me? Right? So there's a real deep like sense of you know, ego and fear when it comes to this. And so I think the first thing is just acknowledge it, recognize it. Don't be hidden about it. Be transparent about it. And the other thing, you know, like Mike was saying is, look, people's job descriptions will change. People do need to upskill and reskill. I think people forget that we have the best possible reskilling instrument that's ever been invented into mankind. And guess what it is? It's AI. If you want to learn a new skill, you have this amazing teacher. So I think we should use it to help people transition into something else. And if you go back to the fundamental belief, if you believe that humans are capable of doing something beyond what they think of today, like we all are, then AI can help us expand our horizon, evolve what we do. And then it's a value creation exercise. It's not a labor reduction exercise.
Yeah. And look, I think that the important thing to understand is like, we're not naive enough to basically say, we care about people, so everyone's job's fine. Let's just figure it out together. Like, there's real structural challenges to certain kinds of jobs that just those jobs aren't going to be needed. And there's, you know, and I don't know the best way to say this, but we live in a world where there's A and B and C level talent. And there's going to be some friction in terms of how this all plays out. The point we're trying to make is this is an organizational change issue. What I think part of the reason why we have come so far so fast, it comes down to one fundamental thing with your employees. If you have a great culture inside your four walls and your employees actually think they trust that you are trying to make decisions to keep them in the game, and we're as open as we can possibly be. Look, change is coming. We understand that it can be very unsettling to say AI is going to come in and take parts of my job. And what we're basically saying is we're going to do everything possible to rethink these jobs with you as quickly as possible. We need you to do one thing. You have to meet us halfway. You have to be willing to evolve. And I think some folks are going to just say, I'm tapping out. I'm going to go somewhere else and I'm going to run with what I did for a while. But to Vinay's earlier point, there are certain tasks in any company that are going away because AI can do it better. It's not about doing it more. AI does it better than humans can do. And it's this sorting out of irreducible and reducible that is going to, you know, that is every single company in the world is going to have to figure that piece of it out. And this is all before robots show up. And I can only imagine what happens next. So it's like, there are times Vinay and I talk and it's like, we're either onto something or we are laughably naive about what is actually happening in the world. Yeah. I hope it's I hope we're onto something, but at any given time. But the biggest thing I would say to Rich, you and Andy is the thing that led to the book was that there was a narrative in the marketplace by these folks like Elon Musk and Sam Altman, who are people, and again, without getting political here, they're so smart that I think sometimes they relate more to the technology than they do to other humans. And I'm sort of like, those folks should not be controlling the narrative about how all this plays out. So how about we put an alternative narrative in the marketplace? And if you give a shit about human beings, maybe we should think about this differently. Maybe we should organize talent differently. Maybe we should try to push out an alternative narrative that says there is hope for humans being at the top of this orchestration layer, but we really have to work at it. And we need to work way faster than anybody's been working so far.
Yeah, well, I love that. The faster, I think, is critical because everybody has a mandate right now. I'm curious with Ben, how did you approach that? I love the idea of looking at reducible skills, irreducible skills. How did you approach that in order to create a framework for defining what Ben was going to do that is outside of the technology? Because it sounds like you took the task first approach. Can you walk us through that a little bit and give us some specifics about how did you break that down? And then, go ahead.
I think that the interesting thing, and I regularly test this analogy, and we do as an organization, and it seems to hold up and has held up for a couple of years now, which is that we treat the AI as if we're hiring it. So like Rich said, we write a job description. It describes, it's like any other job description that you put on, like Indeed or whatever. Mm-hmm. We feed that into a vanilla coworker that we have. And as you know, AI can just do what you ask it to do and think what you want it to think. And it embodies the requirements of the job by reading the job description. It then becomes an intern. And that intern is then, like any other intern, I sort of joke about this, it's like an HBS, a Harvard Business School grad who's like super smart, thinks they're really smart, it's going to work really hard, doesn't really know anything about the real world. So we want to put that person into an internship and have them actually start to interact with humans and test it out. And we used to fire a lot of interns. Like the models weren't good enough. We just didn't know how to write a job description, didn't know how to hire and find the match. And so we used to do that. Now we don't really fire many interns because the models are good and we've gotten good at writing job descriptions. We then promote that coworker into an apprenticeship. And the apprenticeship is where we build out the coworker's resume. So we give it best practices. We give it a lived experience. We give it work experience. We give it a personality. These things show up like humans. We spend a lot of time making sure we hire the humans that meet our values. We got to make sure we hire the AI that meets our values as well and performs in the way that we want humans to perform. And then we give every coworker a human supervisor. This was the most important decision because every single one of us in a corporate sense have a boss. What does a boss do really well? A good boss. It helps you flourish in your career and maximize your potential as a person. That's exactly what the human supervisor is doing with the AI. So that human supervisor then promotes that promotes that AI to a full-time role, and now they're available. And that supervisor stays with that AI in perpetuity. It's their boss. They're regularly doing performance reviews. They're regularly doing 360 reviews with humans that use the coworker. We've put some coworkers on PIPs because they just stop performing. We have a very good idea of how to measure each coworker's performance. We use another set of AI coworkers that are HR AI coworkers that help us manage the other coworkers because there's no way to read all the chat logs because there are thousands of them. And every coworker has a compensation plan. That's our token consumption. So when I get asked, hey, how much ROI are you getting out of this? It's pretty easy because I can look at Ben and say, Ben costs me X thousand dollars a month. And I know exactly what Ben is doing from an impact point of view on how many people is impacting. So it's pretty clear on what the value proposition is. So it's that talent lens that takes you away from the use cases. It takes you away from this idea of like, I got to deploy an agent to solve that copy and paste problem or that data issue. And rather looks at that as jobs. And you're trying to hire the AI's jobs. Now, it sounds counterintuitive because we're all about humans and we just spent, you know, a bunch of time hiring AI to take human jobs. That's not the point. The point is that that drives a level of adoption and a level of understanding. When you take a manager who knows how to hire people and help people be successful, that same manager can hire AI and help AI be successful. It's not a technical thing. It's about how do you manage talent. And it's with that that we've driven so much higher adoption within our organization.
But let me just add one thing, just again, as the non-tech guy at the party here. So we took, her name is Shelley, who was one of the top employee benefit advisors in the country. And there anybody, probably any company out there has thought to themselves, you look at that one employee and go, oh my God, if I had 100 of those employees, we would be an amazing company. Well, we took a top-notch person and said, we would like you to take a new job. Your job is to manage Ben. We need you to get what's in your head into Ben's head, and we need to expand that. And then we need 1,600 other employee benefit consultants interacting with Ben every single day. So that's up to a couple thousand conversations a day. Ben is becoming the best practice for that particular industry vertical. We have coworkers now in 12 different distinct channels where you take a top person and say, bring this coworker to life. And I'll tell you one other thing that's so interesting to me. We were literally writing the chapter on a very controversial issue, which is, do you give Ben does he have a persona, right? Do you bring this human persona to the coworker? And literally we were like pencils down on the chapter, and Bain came out literally that day saying CEOs and consultants and whoever say, don't humanize AI. It's the wrong thing to do. And we're sitting there going, you know what, Bain, you can tell anybody whatever you want to tell them. And these are all folks that are smarter than I am. It works for us, for our culture. Ben having a name, having a face, and interacting with some level of personality, that works for OneDigital. may not work for Bain, may not work for other companies, but I think that's more about the culture you're starting with than it is there's a right or wrong answer in the world, because it's working really well for us.
Well, but I think you're touching on, you know, as you walked through this process, you're touching on a couple of things which I think are now really becoming, you know, the albatross of AI is token consumption, right? Most people can't tell you. I talked to a CIO the other day. They said, just figured out ChatGPT, changed the model, and we're burning through $100,000 tokens a month. Didn't know. And the immediate response from the CFO was, well, shut it down, reduce the token usage. But is that the right approach? You're just reacting to a cost. You're not reacting to the needs of the company. What I like about this promotion of them from intern to associate to full-time employee is that it really is maturing not only the employees that are interacting with the AI, but your AI is becoming more effective for you as an organization, which again, I don't hear a lot of as we talk to people about AI. So I think the approach is unique in the fact that you really are thinking through not only how this becomes part of your culture, which you guys had talked about, how I manage the cost, which everybody is struggling with, and how does this become the most, one of the most efficient employees? How does this become Shelly 2.0 and really drive value for my company, which is what most people are firing employees for, to boost the token usage and balance the budget? And it seems like you guys have found maybe not a loophole, but a way around that.
There are two distinct concepts that make the difference here. So one is what most organizations are doing is they're deploying what you sort of think of as personal AI. Everybody gets a ChatGPT license. Everybody gets a Claude license. Everybody has Copilot. Everybody's just doing whatever they want with their personal AI. The problem with that is that some people will go deep and suck up a bunch of tokens. Some people stay surface and they just like have it write emails for them. What you're not building is institutional knowledge, right? You're not building the knowledge that you need within your organization to make everybody really good at something, right? To benefit, it's just like apply the talent lens. When you hire somebody who's amazing at what they do, it's contagious. Everybody else becomes amazing at what they do because they're learning from each other. They're experiencing that great talent. And you have to be able to do the same thing with AI. So it's really about moving from personal AI to what we sort of think of as enterprise AI. And enterprise AI is the idea of hiring the AI as talent. The other measure, and this is part of the workforce intelligence score, because we think it is defining factor on whether you're really using AI or not, is to move people from transactional use of AI to collaborative use of AI, to eventually co-intelligence use of AI. And all of us have gone through this transition who are in sort of like the post-AI. Like we've all had that like, oh shit moment where you're like, okay, now I really see what's going on here, right? And I've seen it. I've seen it on my kids when they do it. I saw my wife when she made that transition. I've seen it on so many colleagues that it's like they were using AI because it was just a way to get rid of something that they didn't really want to do, right? It was a better Google. It was a time saver, whatever. And then they start to use AI where they like, now this is expanding my mind, right? It is. I'm now at a capability that I didn't even know before. I'm now thinking about things and inquiring about things in a totally different way. It's not the answer that AI gives you. It's the thinking that it causes within you. When you make that transition, you're in the collaborative phase. And we can actually measure that. We know if down to the person, down to the team, who is transactional, who is collaborative. When you move from personal AI to enterprise AI and transactional to collaborative, that's when this becomes like the ROI of tokens is a no-brainer. And you're starting to now build institutional intelligence and really maximizing your human potential.
The one thing, Rich, I would add to that as well is that, and I don't know exactly how this plays out, and there's sort of like, even if we take this sort of pro-humanity, see the faces, keep people in the game, I do think what is going to happen is the ratio of employee to like how work gets done. The headcount ratios inside organizations. I'll give you an example. We just went through a recapitalization of our company. And if you look at like, we were going to, you know, we're projecting to go from a $1.5 billion company to a $3 billion company over the next 5 years. And it had a headcount assumption, quote unquote, headcount assumption of getting to 10 or 12,000 employees from the 6,000 employee we're at. That's not going to happen. Like, we are not going to need the same number of people to do, because work is going to get reconfigured. AI is going to reshape how work gets done. reducible, irreducible is a different staffing ratio inside a company. So I think the economics of that will play out over time, where tokens are actually on the org chart differently from a right. ratio standpoint, that it's just early in the game in terms of how we figure all that out.
But I do think that, like, again, if you play this out and you say, wow, like the revenue or companies can grow with less humans, right? So what are all those people going to do, right? That you don't right. need anymore. So you have to take an approach that says that there's not a limit on value, right? And when we look at our own organization, yes, we can probably do a lot more revenue with the same number of people. But what are you actually doing? You're delivering more value to the world, right? And there can always be more value delivered to the world and to people. And so if you take a value creation mindset to this, then the sky's the limit in terms of what your company can do and what your humans can do. And you're having AI help to do that. And as a society, if we know that we can keep on delivering a better living experience for all of us, then this will be good because humans and AI will continually have stuff to do. I think we worry about, like, we're going to run out of stuff to do because AI is going to do it all and then humans have nothing to do. Well, that's a very limited thinking on what stuff there is to do. And there's a lot of problems in the world that still need to be solved. So,
absolutely.
Like, so I think you have to have that expansive mindset. And like I said earlier, we have the best retraining device ever, which is this personal teacher called AI that will adapt to your personal needs and help you learn to do new things.
Right. I'm wondering, are you building another Ben? What's Shelley's? Is somebody else saying, hang on, I want this? How are you taking the next step on this one?
Well, we have lots of coworkers, and each of them have a human supervisor, and we have a hiring pipeline.
Excellent.
We get asked the question a lot of, like, why do you have different coworkers? Why don't you just have one AI, like the sort of Uber AI? Mm-hmm. And I spoke to a company just earlier this week, actually, on Monday. But, you know, I won't say the company's name, but they had a company name AI, right? And everybody had access to it, and nobody was using it really well. And the reason for that is, when was the last time you had somebody in the office who was the office know-it-all that pretended to know everything? Yeah, exactly. You were like, Bob just like is just spewing shit, right? And so you have to really understand human behavior, I think, to do this. And this was just a conjecture; it's just sort of proven out in our data is that people really want to know that they're working with another person or another AI that is deeply knowledgeable about a certain thing. So when they talk to Ben, they also know they're talking to Shelley in some way. And actually, it's not just Shelley anymore; it's really Shelley and a team of others that are funneling the intelligence and the best practices into Ben. And it's not a one-time thing. It is constantly happening because there's always things happening in our industry and there's always things to learn. So it's that notion that I can go to the place where the subject matter expertise exists and talk to them. And they like, I hear this all the time. Ben helped me with this. I was working with Amy on this proposal yesterday. Jackie told me something so interesting about the client. Dex helped me figure out a way to sell to that client that I was having a hard time getting into. Like, those are all our coworkers. It's just normal vernacular now in the company.
Super interesting.
When you think about, you talk a lot about talent, and we talked about, you know, what is jobs look like, you know, 5 years from now. And we were having a conversation with a CIO, and they were saying kind of part of the challenge is, as older developers, if you take development, start retiring, these are people who coded in C++ and COBOL and all this stuff. And there's still tons of customers out here who still have that, right? And the younger coders have never had to deal with that. And now you layer AI on top of it. What is your thoughts around how age plays into how you train the AI, how you look at the AI, and what does that mean for, I mean, I assume most of these skills go away and we retrain people, to your point, into different skills. But how do you guys look at something like that? And I don't know that you guys have to deal with that. You know, probably don't have a 30-year-old mainframe system lying around that you depend on. But
no, we don't, although there's a lot of old technology and insurance, don't get me wrong. I think I want to touch on one thing you said in there, and I'd love to get Mike's opinion on this too, because Mike's the older guy in this conversation, just to put that clear. You know, is that I think...
I'm with you there, Mike. Don't worry.
I was going to say, Rich is the older guy too. Yeah, I mean, like...
Vinay just created up the work environment. I'm calling HR.
Yeah.
But I am also now in older... I used to be the youngest person all the time in my company. But look, I do think it's a mindset thing. I don't think it's an age thing. I do think, though, that I have seen numerous examples of young people who are post-AI, who are AI native had a completely different way of working and a completely different way of thinking, and like in a good way, than those who are not. And I've also seen young people who are not AI native. And I was talking to a friend the other day, and he was explaining how his company is restricting their use of AI for token consumption or privacy or whatever. I'm like, dude, you got to leave that job, because that company is hamstringing you for your career. You will, like, you find you have a great job right now, but you will wake up in 3 years and try to find another job, and you will be no longer marketable. You know, it's like we used to put, you know, I know Microsoft Word and Excel on your resume. Like, no one puts that on the resume anymore because you assume it. And we're going to assume that people are AI native. And that doesn't mean that you know how to use the technology. That's the easy part. The technology is human technology. You're just chatting with it. What is there to know how to use? It's about how you changed your thinking and what you're capable of and how you approach problems and learning new things with AI native to your thinking. That is a whole different kind of worker than somebody who's not. And I worry about that. And, you know, Mike, despite his age, he is fully post-AI at this point, right? And it's a great example that any age can do it.
Wow. So look, I tell this story all the time that, you know, as a 63-year-old history major, I have been immersed in what is going around what's going on around me. And this all started for me when Vinay helped me get situated with my friend Claude, and then introduced me to a coding software called Replit. And I went to town, and it led to me creating a software tool that helped us understand what was the likely disruption to One Digital as AI fully deployed into the workplace. And it was a stunning number. And I found it completely unacceptable on every level that we were just going to watch these jobs dissolve. And it started us on this journey of basically saying, we have to help people navigate as we help ourselves navigate. And we have to see the faces, and we have to figure out how to deconstruct and reconstruct jobs so that the best work gets done in the swim lane that it needs to get done in. And even a 63-year-old guy can reshape what he does. The challenge we're going to have is for the people that kind of shut down with that level of change, the people that are like anti-AI and these data centers are bad and what about the environment? I get it. I'm sitting there basically saying, everyone's got to get a glove and get in the game and figure out how to navigate this as we try to deal with some of these other problems. But thinking it's going to go away, I don't think ends well for folks that think that way.
And that issue, I think, has nothing to do with your age, because there are young people thinking that way and there are old people thinking that way.
Absolutely.
Same way. So I'm with you that it is like, it's just the reality of you will be left behind. Yeah. Pick.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because we don't see the shift, or at least I haven't seen a lot around it. Maybe you guys have the shift in how we're going to educate people for the future. When you think about, you know, what age, and, you know, we're talking elementary school, middle school, high school, not even college, right? Like, at what age do we introduce this technology? Because a lot of schools are like, no, you can't use AI because you're going to cheat, right? That's how they approach it. But it really is, as you're discussing here, is a reimagining of how you're going to use intelligence in the future. Like, this theme of intelligence is really what people need to start thinking about. And it's not about, well, you need to know 2 + 2. Well, eventually no one's going to probably need to know 2 + 2. I mean, we should, because we should be intelligent people and know how to, you know, add and stuff. But at what point does all that stuff get taken care of for us?
It's interesting. So I have four children. Mm-hmm. And from 1 to 15. So I have a range of like this little experiment.
You've got little
in my
generations
house.
Within your house.
Exactly, I do. And I can sort of see it observing. And, you know, the 1-year-old doesn't know what he's doing yet. But the 15-year-old is in high school. And I won't mention the high school, but they're very like anti-AI. They don't allow AI there. And she got caught once for using AI. And she's not going to enjoy me saying the story. And in the most like dumbest way. And what made me start thinking about is like, look, the way in which somebody uses AI in an educational experience is so important. But I just think of the simple thought experiment. You take a high schooler and you say, I want you to write an essay about the American Revolution. And you take one high schooler who writes the essay without AI and spends 5 hours doing it. You take the next high schooler who says, I'm going to quote unquote cheat, and I'm going to use AI to write it, and I spend 30 minutes in. And then you take the third high schooler who says, I'm going to spend 5 hours writing the same essay with AI. Who do you think is going to come out of that experience more immersed in the subject area. It's going to be the one who spent 5 hours with AI, because the number of scenarios and like what happened to this and what happened to this, like you could do everything you want to in that time frame and learn about so much and explore something so deeply with AI as your teacher and coach and mentor along the way, that that person's learning experience is so much higher quality. And I think that we have to expose our children to that potential. And there's a way to do that. And, you know, again, shift down the age, the younger one, like the 11-year-old, AI native, right? He wanted to help his younger brother make sure that he like brushes his teeth and cleans his bed and does everything on time. Built an app on his little phone that he checks in whenever his brother does it, and his brother's earning coins. And he's like, he was looking on the app store, couldn't find it. Couldn't find an app for himself. So he made his own. He called it Big Brother.
Amazing.
So, like AI native doesn't, you know, didn't even think, just did it. Right. So we gotta help people get exposed to this stuff early on.
Right. Sorry, go on, Andy.
No, go ahead.
So what do you guys see One Digital look like 3 years from now?
So I believe we're going to fundamentally reshape the value proposition of our company. I think we're going to do things for clients we never thought we could do. We're in the middle of a bunch of big problems. Healthcare, the affordability of health insurance is stunning. The preparedness for retirement and, you know, people's readiness is not where it needs to be. We're in the wealth management business. The number of people that need a financial plan that don't have a financial plan, and helping people get out of debt. So we are a mission-driven company, and we are coming to the realization that if we leverage AI differently than we've ever thought before, we're going to be able to do things for customers that is stunning. We're going to look back 3 years from now and say, I can't believe that's what we used to do, and that's what we used to get paid for doing that. That's like tables. That's like the first 5 minutes of like preparation. So it has to do with reshaping the way we use large language models, understanding every conversation, synthesizing information, and then prospectively signaling to, we think about our people as being the head of an orchestra. So you're going to take an employee benefit consultant who's working with Ben, who has an entire orchestra of agents that are signaling them what's going on with their clients, because they're reading narratives every single day. And it's going to transform the way clients are going to give me phone calls during the week going, hey, I see something going on now. I'm not going to talk to you at our next quarterly meeting. I see it going on now, and we need to interact now. That was never doable before. I think it's going to start getting at these major problems in different ways. And my hope is we fundamentally become something that's needed at a time when all of this transformation is going on. So we're beating this drum of like truly reshaping and innovating and embracing, and we can't do it without AI. So it's like keep our people in the game, but the work is going to fundamentally reshape and our value proposition is going to get completely reconfigured. And it's pretty darn exciting.
Yeah, there's a visual that I refer to a lot in thinking about what an organization like this looks like in the future. If you sort of think about, you know, infrastructure and data as like a layer, all right? And then you have intelligence, and then you have people. Now, your organization today has people down here on the infrastructure data layer. They're copying and pasting. They're sending emails around. They're doing the things that are reducible, right? And the whole goal here is to deploy AI to float your humans to the top. And then the top grows. The value that your humans offer continues to grow. It's not a finite limit. So what your exercise is how do I float humans to the top, automate everything else underneath it, and build this great cycle of intelligence generation between humans and AI that's happening at the top layers, where humans are doing the irreducible skills and AI is doing the reducible skills. And knowing that thing is that where the layers are and the divisions is constantly changing. And so I think there's a new type of organization that does that really well in whatever industry you're in. And that's how we see us transitioning as a company.
I think we talk all the time about the fact that probably one of the biggest things that is challenging everybody right now is a lack of imagination on where their company needs to go. And we're having this discussion about how does AI get deployed to do exactly what we're doing today? And how does that play out relative to headcount? Our view is that's the wrong discussion. You need to be saying, what are we going to be doing 3 years from now? And what does that orchestration look like? And then divide who does what work with the most capable entity to do that. One's human, one's AI. It's a fundamentally different discussion. And we had to get there. It's like there's a process that you go through to figure this out, but all of a sudden the possibilities become endless and we're having a fundamentally different discussion. And again, the challenge is we're flying the plane while we're building it. There's a lot of folks at One Digital going, you're hitting me with one more thing. Are you kidding me? It's like, how am I going to keep on top of all the stuff that's going on? It's an organizational issue. It's a change management issue. It's a trust issue. But people need to stop taking a snapshot of what's happening today and understand we're living in a movie and you need to move with it. Don't take the snapshot and worry about who wins and who loses. Understand this is all about forward motion. And once you get there, it's a fundamentally different discussion.
Right. I think the bureaucracy of most companies prevents that from happening, though. You know, I mean, when you think about really like, you know, these $50, $60 billion companies, there's so many heads involved of who owns what and what decision are we making, and filtering it down to the employees just never really happens in an elegant way. And it sounds like, you know, the approach you guys are taking is bringing your employees with you on a very deliberate journey that doesn't seem like you're hiding from it. A lot of people are like, oh, we're going to deploy AI. Okay, how? Well, we're going to get there. We're going to tell you that soon. And then we're going to lay off all our CS reps because we created a new bot. Wait, where did that come from? You know, and it seems the journey you're taking them on and what you've outlined in the book about that journey seems like you're honoring the humanity of the people, which is how this theme of the humanity test keeps on coming back to.
Yeah, look, I think there's a bunch of structural issues that firms need to figure out what's best for them. But invariably, what we see happen all the time is, you know, AI is here. So what do? We go to the IT department, you know, the IT department that makes sure the lights are on, make sure the computers work, make sure, you know, you're secure, and say, oh, by the way, you need to now deploy AI. And because this is a technology, figure it out. And we're sitting there, we have an amazing IT leader. It was never an IT issue. Vinay, as a product offer, is saying, I understand the technology. I'm not worried about cyber. I'm not worried about computers. This is a different issue. And this is about how we're going to manage talent. In addition to that, we started talking. And so a co-founder says, you know what? I own this with you. And we're going to drive this through the organization. So I would say if the C-suite hasn't had that activation moment, it's not going to happen in the firm.
Yeah, and
it started with us.
I can't emphasize enough how that is a very personal journey.
Right.
Because when we say the C-suite needs to be activated, leadership needs to be activated, that means that they personally, in the work that they are doing every day, whatever that is, needs to be AI native. Mm-hmm. Because it's only when you as a leader make that transition that then the company does. And we actually see it in the data. Like, it is very clear throughout our company, up and down, if a manager is using AI collaboratively, remember, we know how to measure that, their team does. If the manager does not, the team doesn't. Like, it's really clear. It doesn't matter what we're doing on advocacy and training and whatever. It comes down to leaders showing that this is the way of going forward, giving people permission to go forward in this way, and showing them that that's what's valued. Is your personal acceleration value creation is what we want to see as a company. And we're going to invest in that. And I've done that myself. Let's do that together.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, I think this is such a terrific way to look at the and frame the issue that is sitting in front of so many companies who are looking and saying, yep, we are AIing everything, whether it's pressure from the board, whether it's pressure from the C-suite. But this is a totally different way to frame it up and actually make it happen. It's so practical. It makes a ton of sense. And I love the framework with the data here and the intelligence and the people. It's so easy to follow. It's something that we're not looking at. We tend to focus on just data or just technology and then merging them together. It's such a refreshing way to really look at how are we bringing this into our companies. I think for me, I think this is hugely helpful for the clients who I'm working with. Rich, I know that we will take so much out of this conversation. So thank you guys so much for your time on this.
When's the book release?
Book comes out 8/25. Can't get here fast enough. I think every single day, Vinay and I check the news and basically say, is someone going to say we like know what we're talking about or we suck today? So it's like, it can't get here. It's just got to come out in the world. But look, we had our moment where we said, look, we have covered a lot of ground here. I think a lot of people are going to understand the practical nature, Andy, exactly what you said. Like, this is just a practical way. And when you start talking about it like talent, you start talking about we are amplifying our people. And if you decide you're going to amplify your people, you will amplify your firm. It's like it is about self-preservation as well. We had that moment, like, if we don't do this, this doesn't end well for One Digital. So amplify our people, we will amplify our firm. And all of a sudden, things start clicking. Doesn't mean there isn't a boatload of work to do, but we're sitting there going, we need our clients to be successful because we do well if employment does well, right? So this is 100% like figure it out and then get this into the world. And we have yet to have anyone sort of read the book and say, there are things that I can take away from this. I'll have to adapt it to my company, but there's things here that I can help. It'll get us farther along.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, but it's the framework, I think, that might be the missing link for a lot of people. Andy's point, the practicality of it just makes a lot of sense. So we appreciate you guys joining us today. This was a great discussion. I can't wait to get this out to everybody, and really excited for the book to launch and wishing you guys wild success with that. And hopefully we'll all be doing the Workforce Intelligent framework.
Exactly. I love the framework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on. It's been fun. And I got to report Vinay to HR now. So I got to pop.
I agree. I agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Flagrant violation.
Yeah.
All right.
It's lucky we're not this being recorded. Thanks, guys.
Have a great one, you guys. Thanks so much.
See you, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity.
Bye-bye. 1, 2, 3.